Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Your Ben Jarofsky Show for this Friday, March 29th, starts now. Today on the show, it's Oh What a Week, so Ben's talking the top stories with WVON's own Atiba Buchanan. The Ben Jarofsky Show, a presentation of the Chicago Reader. ChicagoReader.com for everything there is to know in the city of Chicago. If you want to know what to do, where to go, what to eat, what to drink, you want to know places in the city to hang out if you're from out of town, head to ChicagoReader.com. I guarantee you, you will find useful information. And if you want more useful Ben Jarofsky, head to ChicagoReader.com/Jarofsky. That's J-O-R-A, V as in victory, S-K-Y.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this No Principles Friday, and here's why. Actually, it's Oh What a Week. We're going to sort of summarize news events of the week, if we could stay on focus, which I have a funny feeling. An old friend is on the show, Atiba Buchanan, and we kind of wander here, over here, here and there. Atiba Buchanan, ladies and gentlemen, longtime listeners of my show, remember that he used to be a regular, come on all the time, and then he got his own radio talk show at WVON. He's so busy, it's very hard to book him, and usually he's booking me to come on his show. So now, the role, last time Atiba reached out to me, Ben, come on primary night on last Tuesday. I go, look, it's got to be a two-way street here, Atiba Buchanan.
That's right. That's right.
So we cut a deal.
Happy to return the favor, good sir.
Yes. Excellent man on the mic. Truly talented. I just want to give you a shout out of praise right now. I was talking to Monroe about this. Your ability to hold your thought. Because on AM radio, WVON radio, there's commercials, there's traffic, there's news, there's callers coming in. You got Ben on hold. You got Monroe on hold. You got Jeanette Taylor on hold, whatever, whoever's on hold. And just to, like, keep your somehow like an air traffic controller at Atiba. Do you follow what I'm saying? It's like you keep it all together. So just my way of shouting out to you.
Well, I appreciate that. Definitely not an easy job, but one that I have grown better at. Because trust me, I wasn't always good at it.
Yeah. Well, you were pretty good. I would say if there's such a thing as a natural, you are there. You got the gift of gab, that's for sure. And your ability to be quick on your feet. All right, I'm going to open up with something that's on my mind, which I don't even know if we said we're going to discuss before, but that's get ready for impromptu on my show. But we did. It has to do with the flag burning situation in the Chicago City Council. So just to summarize, in case there's some folks out there who don't know what I'm talking about, Alderman Byron Sixa Lopez of the 25th Ward, good friend of the show, comes on all the time, will be on next week. A lefty, if there ever was one, showed up at a rally against the Biden policies toward Gaza, Israeli war in Gaza, Palestinian rights, a rally, right after another person who was at the rally, a vet, for what it's worth, a former Marine, burned an American flag. Byron gave his talks and then left. He was not there when the flag was burned, and most importantly, he did not burn the flag. Subsequently, there's been a movement now in the Chicago City Council to strip him of his chairmanship of the Housing Committee. Mayor Brandon Johnson says he's against that, but a special meeting will probably be convened on Monday if they can get a quorum. And here's the point I'm going to make. I got many thoughts on this one, Atiba, but I'm reading about this. Personally, I would not burn a flag. That's not where I'm at. I'd be uncomfortable at a rally where a flag was burned. However, I'm like, how could you have a debate with MAGA on this subject? And most of these aldermen are acting out of the MAGA persuasion. MAGA reserves the right to desecrate absolutely anybody and anything in this country. They invaded the Capitol, Atiba, on January 6th, okay? You talk about desecration. They carried Confederate flags into the Capitol, okay, on January 6th. They defecated on the floors of the Capitol. Do you follow me? Donald Trump desecrates the American flag at every rally, the American national anthem, when he wears his MAGA hat while saluting when they play the national anthem as performed by January 6th insurrectionists, who their version of the national anthem is more off-key than my version of Incognito's Don't You Worry About a Thing, okay? Which I just...
yeah.
So how could you have... Help me here, Atiba. Like, one side feels free to desecrate absolutely any symbol or any protocol we have at any given notice, and the other side is like, even if they didn't burn the flag, they're being vilified for it. Help me here, Atiba. I need your wisdom on this. Go ahead.
Man, I wish I could help you, Ben. I wish I could help you. Here's what frustrates me in this situation. There's so many elements to it. First of all, when I think of flag burning, the first thing I think of is First Amendment. I think of the right to free speech. Because this was all hashed out. We went through all this as a country about, hey, can we burn the flag? And we gave it a resounding yes. But to your point, the alderman didn't do it. He wasn't there when it happened. Now, you may mention that it was a Marine that burned the flag. Let's add to this that this is a Marine that has seen combat. Right? This wasn't just a veteran. This is a veteran that has seen combat. So this is someone who is saying this, and the reason he said he burned the flag, and I'm paraphrasing, was because looking at what we're doing, looking at what we're supporting in Gaza, and I can't remember if he, I'll leave it to Gaza. He's saying that he doesn't see America in that flag anymore. Whatever values and traditions that we had may as well be burned up because we're not being the America that he has been known to love all of his life. So again, we've agreed that he has a right to do that. I get frustrated because the same people, again, that are upset are the same ones that say they are traditional constitutionalists, right? That they love the Constitution, but they only love it when it suits them, right? And so again, what we're talking about ultimately is hypocrisy of the highest order. And these are people that don't, you know, normally when someone is being hypocritical, you can point out the hypocrisy, and that might shame them to alter their perspective. Not here. You can point out the hypocrisy, and they don't care. So it is pointless to point out the history of this country. It is pointless to say to them, because I think the word used for the January insurrectionists at this point by Donald Trump and his minions is patriots. These people are called patriots. But how dare Colin Kaepernick not stand for the national anthem? How dare a Marine, again, a veteran Marine whom they purport to love and whom they were upset at Colin Kaepernick for disrespecting, how dare he have the nerve to burn the flag because he doesn't see American values anymore? So, again, the hypocrisy is of the highest order, and it is pointless to point out anything you and I have just said to them.
Well, okay, so let's get into that pointless aspect. And by the way, this sounds like a conversation we probably had 2 years ago, whenever it was the last time we were on the show, the pointlessness of debating MAGA. I will push back on this. I believe it's absolutely important to point out the hypocrisy, of any hypocrisy, but particularly with MAGA, just because it's important to have some standards. So I personally cannot allow all standards to be washed away as if they don't matter only to watch them invoked when it's convenient for the other side. So just as I go through life, I want a consistency. I want a consistency of logic, a consistency of principle. And if you are going to be inconsistent, at least acknowledge it and explain why. Why you're shifting. It's people could change their minds, Atiba. An issue could have more significance and importance to you than another issue, so you feel compelled to kind of change your point of view. We're not all perfect people. But in this day and age, I don't know how we can have democracy anymore with 45% of the public saying they will completely change and distort their point of view and their worldview at the drop of a nickel. Do you follow what I'm saying? Anytime. Go ahead. How can you have democracy?
Well, what we have to do, again, is continue to win elections and outvote them. So what I was suggesting by saying it's impossible to talk to them, I wasn't saying that there's anything we can do. I was just saying that trying to win them over is not part of the solution. But there are certainly things that we need to continue to do. And the most paramount and important of that is continue to win free and fair elections. That's the only tool that we have left at this point. Because, I mean, we've seen now, what is the thing the Heritage Foundation has put out, Project 2025?
Yeah.
They've made it clear that what they plan to do, if and when they ever take hold of office again, we have to prevent that at all costs. Because everything that happened on January 6th, all of the institutions that held, be it the vice president on down, all of those institutions that held, what they've done for the past 3 years is look at how to weaken all of those institutions and put their people in place so that the next time they do want to bring fake electors, it's not going to be a problem. They are looking to really literally dismantle the system.
All right, we're going to get into that. Before I leave completely the issue of the flag burning and the alderman in Chicago, just curious, what's been the sentiment of callers to your WVON talk show on this matter?
VON listeners are not concerned about performative things like flag burning one way or the other. They're not going to be upset about it, or they're not going to promote it. VON listeners are looking for policy. You know, they're looking for what's in the budget, who's going to control the money, what happens next. So performative things like flag burning, not on their radar.
All right, I can get into that, although I'm kind of obsessed with the issue myself, but I hear what you're saying. So let's get into, you said the only way to deal with the hypocrisy is to win elections. I had a brief conversation with Atiba about this before we went on the air, and you expressed what I would call a Monroean viewpoint of the election, and it's named for our dear friend Monroe Anderson, who comes on the show every Wednesday, who has just been consistently, steadfastly, almost cockily confident that Joe Biden will defeat Donald Trump in November.
Yeah.
To the point where he's like, take your money and go put it down in Vegas if you can. You heard it from me. And I got listeners that call in, you know, they want Biden to win, they write in, but, you know, they've been trained by the New York Times to fear the worst. They go into the fetal position every day with fear that Trump will get elected. They turn every good news into Debbie Downer bad news, and they just can't believe Monroe is going to be proven correct. You seem to agree with Monroe. Go ahead, take the floor.
Oh, God, thank you. Thank you so much. So let's start with this. One word, independence. Donald Trump won in 2016 because there were enough, because we understand the percentage of people that are with him no matter what. And if that were enough for him to win, he would have won in 2020. But in 2016, he was an unknown. There were enough people that were willing to roll the dice and say, hey, this guy's in the politician. He's a disruptor. Let's give him a shot. Then we gave him a shot. And they got an opportunity to see how he governed. And then they got an opportunity to see how he governed under crisis, under a pandemic. And what happened after every election since 2016? he's lost. He's either lost or Republicans have lost. And even in the areas that they've won, it was never the victory that they ever thought it would be. So you look at the two midterms, right? He came in with a supermajority. It only took one midterm to change that. He loses the presidency in 2020. And then in 2022, again, they're predicting this red wave, and it's more like a red splash. To the degree that we have not one, but we have two Democratic senators in Georgia. Donald Trump, again, frightens independents, and he continues to do so. So again, the reason I ultimately, the most succinct way I can put it is, he's not going to be able to draw in enough people. Now, Joe Biden has concerns, and they are legitimate. Donald Trump is going to get more of the black vote than any Republican in a long time, but it's still not going to be enough, because suburban voters, especially suburban white women, they are not going to be able to give him the numbers and roll the dice that they were willing to do in 2016, because they know what he is now. And people are not buying what he is. I've seen more stories. I've been encouraged by, for every one of the stories that people, you know, will reverse themselves in ridiculous manners for him, there are almost just as many people who are saying enough is enough. They are tired of this, and they are ready to get back to some consistency in the White House. And here's the other thing, too. Now, Donald Trump has a record. Joe Biden has a record. And by every measurable standard, if you care about data at all, economically, you name it, the country is in a far better position than it was. We've created more jobs. We have the lowest unemployment. We have not just more jobs. We have more manufacturing jobs than we've had in decades. So again, by every measurable metric, Joe Biden's tenure, his 3 years presidency, has outperformed Donald Trump's 4 years, probably even a year and a half ago.
All right. You said there's a lot to unpack there, and I'll start with this one point, and I'm paraphrasing. I don't get the exact quote. Donald Trump will get more of the black vote than any Republican in a long time. The last Republican I recall, a presidential candidate that got, I don't know, the I have it in quotes, significant portion of the black vote would have been Baby Bush in 84.
Yeah.
You think Trump's going to outperform Baby Bush among black voters?
I do, primarily because of black men. Again, using WVON anecdotally as a metric, there is definitely a vein of black men of different age groups, too, of different age groups that view Democrats, the Democratic Party, as really an exercise in futility. And to boot, there's a vein of in the black community of people that enjoy being a contrarian. They feel like when they vote for Trump, they're not one of the sheep, that they're not going to be controlled. You know, evidence and data be damned. them having a contrarian point of view, and they want to be beholden to that and not shamed into feeling like they have to vote for the Democratic Party because that's we don't get. And then they're so frustrated with their local politics. And they view Chicago as a Democrat-run city, right? That's how they view that. So the animus and the angst and the anger that they have for their local alderman, they carry that over and misplace that into the presidential election. Mm-hmm. And say, you know, so they're trying to vote Republican every way they can. When at the root of what they're really evaluating is their local life, their local politics, and the things that they are frustrated with in their local political scene.
No, that's really a great synopsis of it. And whenever I come on your show, invariably there's the phone call argument I get into with some listener on this very point. I can't remember their names. You know, Billy Bob from Burbank, you're on with Ben Jarofsky. And then the next thing you know, we're arguing over. I remember this was particularly the case when I would come on your show around the midterms 2022 when Pritzker was running for re-election. Remember those conversations very well.
Yep.
So yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. Do you think there's any validity when Donald Trump says he's going to get more of the blacks? That's how he phrases it. More of the blacks.
He does.
I mean, I'm just telling you, folks, to vote for him because of his mugshot. You've heard him on. I know you've heard this. Do you think there's any validity to that? Go ahead.
No. There's absolutely. I mean, everything for the. He's never articulated the reason that black people will vote for him. They've relegated it to gym shoes. We like shiny gym shoes. They've relegated it to mugshots. So it's never the. It's never a real issue. It's never the real thing because he doesn't see us as a real. He doesn't see us as real people.
Yeah.
So again, he says it. I mean, when everyone lost their minds, he was speaking to again a majority black audience not long ago at a rally, mm-hmm. and he made a joke about he can't, you know, the lights are so bright he can only see the black people, and then he went on to say quietly, "Have you seen how far I've come?" He's admitting out loud he knows what the correct narrative is about him.
Yeah.
Because he's done that. He's saying, I really don't normally see you in anything that matters, but I'm going to say I see you now.
Hmm.
Again, for something that is so inconsequential. And the fact that I've had black conservatives on my show justify everything that he said in that moment. To them, they found nothing to be offended about.
Well, I could tell you, he panders as much to Jewish voters. So he had the comment, which was, in my opinion, as outrageous as when he talks about the blacks. He's like, he talks about the Jews and any Jew that doesn't vote Republican hates his religion. I'm like,
and the country.
Yeah. So I just feel like the amount of hate and anti-Jewish sentiment that he's exhibiting there, where he's just reduced thousands and thousands of people to this stereotype. It's the same thing he does with black people. And you will find Jewish Republicans who will defend it, like you will find
that's right.
Black Republicans who defend it. You know, and again, where we began, Atiba, if people have no standards, if they have no principles, if there's no base for what they believe, if their beliefs are purely tactical and strategic and all about winning an election, so I don't know what a black conservative is going to get out of a Donald Trump election. A fervently pro Netanyahu Jewish voter would get an endorsement of the policy in Gaza. I guess that's what they would get. If that's it, then you can't argue with them, T. But do you follow what I said?
No, I agree wholeheartedly. Go ahead.
No, because they won't hold Trump to the same standard that they would hold Biden.
Or anybody else.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or anyone else. That's the stunning part about that is there are Republicans that couldn't say the things that Trump gets away with. You know, as we talk about Donald Trump, I mean, and the Republican Party, because it's so much bigger than him. My frustration when you said all they're concerned about is winning elections. I wish they were concerned about winning elections. I wish they were concerned enough to develop policies that would win over the thinking of American people to actually win the election. They don't care about winning the election. They're here to take the election, and there's a difference. So because of that, the word that I use for them and him is unserious. And it frustrates me because what it does is, for all the people that are rightly frustrated with the Democratic Party, because Republicans are so unserious, it allows Democrats to be apathetic and lazy in their approach. Democrats aren't coming with bold new ideas. They've been running the last two or three election cycles on, at least we're not them. And that's really all they have to say at this point. So again, we need two vibrant parties. The way I can put it is monopolies are bad. And if there was one place in the city, just one place in the city that sold hamburgers or sold pizza, and they know that this is the only place in the city that you can get a hamburger or a pizza slice, are they going to give you the best hamburger? And are they going to be motivated to do that? Absolutely not. But if they knew there were three other places, then of course, again, competition, you know, diversity spurs competition. And so we need the Republican Party to be the Republican Party. I heard a speech, a snippet of Ronald Reagan talking about immigration from 89 or one of the, and it was stunning. He would be tarred and feathered for the things that he said. But I will say this, it was actually refreshing to hear someone speak and keep their train of thought and give you a cogent sentence. And I mean, he was a statesman, and some of us actually miss that. And so, you know, when you look at the Donald Trump, you know, you look at him and you look at all of the tentacles of him, the Marjorie Taylor Greens, the Jim Jordans, they are literally just diluting our political process into something we don't even recognize.
All right. You mentioned immigration, and that'll get to migrants. But before we get to that, I want to close down the Trump conversation.
Sure.
And I said to Atiba, I said, what do you want to talk about? And one of the first things he said, Trump's grifting. And I said, I'll absolutely have that conversation. I haven't had that conversation in a while. This is a story that goes from the political pages to the business pages. Donald Trump is probably the most significant salesman of my lifetime. This guy is nonstop. He's relentless. He feels confident that he could sell absolutely anything to anybody. And it has been, he's been very successful in it, selling ideology, selling shoes, selling steak, selling real estate, selling the value of his name, etc. He has a promotion now that is probably could get him access to billions of dollars by selling stock in his social media company, which is called Truth, which is such a joke. Because the guy does nothing to lie. this man is relentless, Atiba. I think it's, I got to tip my hat to him.
Let me add this, man. As I hear you say this, he can sell anything once. He can sell Trump University once. Yes. Right? He can sell Trump vodka once.
Yeah.
He can sell Trump casinos once. So everything that he puts his hand on, it doesn't have any staying power because he is the worst. So my thing is, I can't, having that track record, I just named three things. Like, who bankrupts a casino? Donald Trump does. Right? So I you can name all of these failed endeavors, and there's always a sucker ready to get in line.
Yeah.
His Bibles. Here's the funny thing. It's not a coincidence that he's selling the Bibles now when he needs $175 million. Okay. There's no way that that's a coincidence, right? But I saw his video of it, and he's talking about it has the Constitution in it, it has the Bill of Rights in it, it has all these things. And again, I thought we were supposed to have a separation of church and state, but all of those things in the Bible speaks to a bigger thing, much bigger than him. These are people that want to have a theocracy.
Yeah.
That's what they want. And so his Bible is just evidence of, again, the bigger issue of what they really want. We should not have the Ten Commandments at courthouse steps. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Have you ever seen, it was passing around social media, a Jamie Foxx imitation of Donald Trump? I don't know if people know this. Jamie Foxx is a very talented mimic. He does great impressions.
His impressions are phenomenal.
His Trump is second to none. Okay, so he does this whole riff about Trump, and it's like he's being an interview. He's pretending he's on some talking to black people about his favorite rap songs, and he can't identify any rap songs because he's just BSing. He doesn't know any rap songs.
Right, he doesn't know.
But then what Jamie Foxx did was he took that blip where somebody asked Trump for his favorite parts of the Bible. He was talking. Yes. They asked him what his favorite book is. He goes, the Bible. What's your favorite parts of the Bible? And since he had probably never read the Bible, he had absolutely no idea how to. You got all of it. I love it all. And so Jamie Foxx was, I love all rap. And he captured the essential bullshit of Donald Trump so well. You know what I'm saying? He just he took it from the Bible to rap music. It was just priceless.
Do you remember Donald Trump in front of Lincoln University before he won, when he was on the campaign? And he was trying to quote a scripture.
Oh,
and he said, it's right here in 2 Corinthians. This is the guy selling the Bible. And he said this in front of a Christian school.
Yeah, man.
Everybody in the audience chuckled to themselves quietly, and nobody said anything.
Yeah.
Everybody in that audience knew how preposterous it was that he said 2 Corinthians. That let us know right there that he had never picked up the Bible in his life.
Yeah, and they still probably voted for him anyway.
They did, and he has the evangelical vote, and they say he is God's pick.
Yeah,
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that is really... Yeah, so in one case, it's one of the greatest grifting jobs I would say I've seen in my lifetime. He's outperformed everyone, and that's like a backhanded tip of the hat. All right, let's
Here's
close.
The thing, though. I'm sorry, one last thing.
Go.
We got to keep this in mind, because he's in the process now of being caught. Like, we cannot, I mean, he has, what, 91 indictments? Like, the grift is up. Right. The only reason this man isn't behind bars today or homeless and starved to death is because he was president of the United States. And that has afforded him all types of delay tactics and deference that the average person would not have.
Yeah.
But the grift is up. The grift is up. He's had the benefit. He's only running for president. He couldn't care less about performing the duties of the presidency. He's trying to stay out of jail. He's trying to not be held accountable.
Yeah. Well, this is by this, like.
But the grift is up.
The grift is. By the way, I think it's actually 88 indictments, because I think several were thrown out of court in Atlanta. But whatever, 88, 91. Look, we're trying to be accurate with a guy who just lies all the time. You mentioned immigration, and we'll close with this. You and I haven't had a conversation about this in a while. We briefly talked about it sometimes. I've been on your show. The quote-unquote migrant crisis here in the city of Chicago. My personal belief is that Chicagoans in particular, but Americans across the board, have been absolutely brainwashed by the immigration debate and have been led to believe that it's a huge crisis, when I don't really think of it as a huge crisis. And it's been very successful at exploiting ethnic rivalries, blacks,
yep.
Hispanics, whites and Hispanics, new Hispanics who've been here for 30 years, Hispanics who are just showing up here, Asians and Hispanics. It's remarkable, Atiba, the number of communities that have protested the arrival of new migrants in the city of Chicago. I've had people come on the show and go, well, Ben, you don't understand. The reason why there's opposition in the black community is that the black community has been ignored all these years. Now they see these new residents getting benefits. And I'm like, well, why weren't you joining my protests when all the money was being spent in rich white neighborhoods? Where was the outrage in the O's when Daley and Rahm were spending all your property tax dollars in rich white?
In Lincoln Park.
In Lincoln Park. Yes. Thank you, Atiba. I'm like, help me, Atiba. I believe America has been brainwashed on the issue of immigration and migrants. Your thoughts?
So I think from the perspective of, in particular, the black community, and I'm speaking broadly, the black community very oftentimes is at the bottom of the totem pole. Unfortunately, I think for some people, it feels good to kick down for a change. So we have an opportunity to, because when, you know, when some of the people call in and just even some of the conversations that I have organically, I am stunned. I wish people could recognize that the things that they are saying are the exact same things that white people said about black people moving into the suburbs, right? 50 years ago, 60 years ago, 70 years ago, hell, 30 years ago. And so I think for some people, it feels good to be able to kick down for change instead of being kicked upon. That's the first issue. The other is, what they've been able to successfully peddle is the idea of limited resources, is the idea of, in order for some person to gain, that means you have to lose. And because that's where the conversation starts, anything that they gain is viewed as something that is being taken away from someone else. And so I always start with the idea that, guess what? We can rectify the south side, the south and west sides of Chicago, and we can help migrant people that are coming here out of desperation. It's not a binary choice. It's a both and. It's not an or. And so that's the biggest thing they've been able to be successful at, is painting this idea that the resources are so limited. And again, that anything given to them, and again, I'm using the word given loosely, anything appropriated for them is something that that would be taken away from you. And many people have bought into that idea. When you look at the net, you know, you look at how migrants affect your life, your daily life, how have they really affected it? I can't think of a substantive way that any migrant has affected my life. Mm-hmm. The biggest way they've affected me is seeing them camped out in front of the police station on 18th and State, and it makes me sad. But there's nothing I have not been able to do in my life, and I would say this is true for most people, because of migrants. Mm-hmm. That's not to say I don't have a sense of fairness. I get it. I do appreciate the frustration, but I think that a lot of it is misplaced. And then ultimately, to be upset at the person that has the least amount of ability to affect this whole situation in Mayor Brandon Johnson, the mayor of one city in one state, you know, nine states away from the problem, and not hold Congress accountable. Because I get it. It's more complex to hold 600 members of Congress accountable, 500 members of Congress accountable, than it is just one mayor or one president. I get that. But ultimately, again, this is an issue with Congress. It's so much bigger with them. And no one is upset about Donald Trump kiboshing a bipartisan bill out of the Senate that gave Republicans almost everything they wanted for the border crisis, simply because he didn't want a Democratic president to get credit for handling the crisis. Yeah. How un-American can you be?
That was a great riff, man. I agree pretty much everything you said. And then the part about Brandon Johnson, I have my issues with how the mayor and the administration has responded. But to vilify him, to scapegoat him, I don't believe that's part of an objective analysis of what's going on in the city. That's just taking an opportunity to bring Brandon Johnson down. And I will tell you this, Atiba, I believe this. I came on your show the night Brandon won. I came on your show the night he won the primary. Whenever there's an election, you and I get together. And
that's right.
And I just said, this is not ending with this election with Brandon Johnson. The opposition, you watch, the opposition to Brandon Johnson is not going to end with this. There's not going to be a coming together in Chicago to support Brandon Johnson. And from the get-go, Atiba, the forces that ran against him, downtown business community, the editorial boards, the paper, Paul Vallis, Republicans and MAGA have been getting ready for the rematch.
Unrelenting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, like I said, I'm stunned that, again, the person that has the least amount of ability to impact that in any significant way is the person that gets the most blame.
Yeah.
So Brandon Johnson did not ask Greg Abbott to send those people here. They, you know, and I get frustrated because I don't know what they want people to do. ultimately, the only thing that will placate many of the people that I hear is that they want to, they anything short of putting them out is not a, is an issue. If they come here and they get assistance, then we're mad because they're getting assistance. Yeah. If they come here and they get a work visa, we're mad they got a work visa. Like, what do you want them to do? Do you want them to take care of themselves or not?
Yeah.
So again, it's the cognitive dissonance is a lot for me. And ultimately, the lack of empathy is what breaks my heart the most.
Yeah.
Yeah, the hardened hearts and the hatred. All right, Atiba, I'm going to let you go. You're a busy man today, and you have a concert you will be attending tonight, and so I'm feeling really happy about you. So just to let people know, Atiba...
And guess who my date is, man? Guess who my date is?
I don't even want to go. I don't want to make a guess. Who is your date?
Darlene Hill.
Oh, okay. Very good.
Look at that.
Back together again. Yes, can't stay away to go see Incognito, and tomorrow I'll be seeing Herbie Hancock, so it'll be a music weekend for the two of us.
Absolutely,
I'm really looking forward to that, and I know you're looking forward to your concert tonight. I hope they sing Don't You Worry About a Thing, so you can take my
They better
so you can take my rendition out of your head, so you don't have to hear that. Thank you very much, Atiba. I appreciate you coming on the show, and I'll talk to you real soon, all right?
Please, let's do this again, Ben. It's been fantastic, man. I love you.
I will reach out to you, get you on at least once a month, because now I know you have some time on Fridays. We can get it done. All right, Atiba Buchanan, The Afternoon Show, WVON. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
I also want to thank producer Chris. He does an outstanding job, and I know Atiba agrees with me when I say, hey, producer Chris, give yourself a raise, take it out of petty cash. Peace and love, everybody.
Have a great weekend, everybody. And remember, you can catch all the previous Ben Jarofsky shows, bonus interviews. You can get signed up for the Reader newsletter. You can read Ben Jarofsky's previous articles if you missed any of them, all at chicagoreader.com. You can find Ben on Instagram. It's at Benny J Show. And don't forget, like, subscribe, follow, and tell your friends about the Ben Jarofsky Show.